Hello there. Don't be alarmed. We're just preparing your listening device for Scuba Radio, the world's first radio show devoted to diving. We do this, of course, by filling your radio with water. Don't worry. We're professionals. Thanks to me, you won't even get wet. You see, I've crammed every appendage of my body into the cracks and crevices of your radio, ensuring an airtight seal. By the way, don't touch your on-off knob. That's a very sensitive area. Anyway, I should remind you, we believe in the buddy system just like diving, so don't listen alone. Call your buddy and tell them that Scuba Radio is about to begin.
We're going to start a new life under the sea.
So, am I going to drown?
Of course not. Just stay calm and let the gentle currents relax your every muscle.
Under the sea. Under the sea.
Did it just get warmer?
There'll be no accusations, just friendly crustaceans under the sea.
Where the hell are the sharks?
And now, here's your dive guide for Scuba Radio, Greg the Dive Master.
And welcome to hour two of the world's first radio show devoted to diving. I am Greg the Dive Master. All right, so we're going to start off this hour reflecting on the life of Rob Stewart. Rob was the guy behind this movie Shark Water that, it just ricocheted around the world as far as the positive reaction it received. I think initially it won an award like at Sundance Film Festival, and it just caught fire. And it had a big environmental message. I had talked to Rob on Scuba Radio a couple times when this movie came out, and I found him to be unworldly attractive as another guy. I mean, this guy was just chiseled. He looked like a actor and like superstar, and he turned into that. I mean, I talked to him before he before the movie broke, and I was like, this guy is he's going to be like, you know, the Brad Pitt of shark diving or something.
At least the Burt Reynolds.
At least. And he kind of did evolve into that. And just became just an ambassador for shark protection. And, I mean, shark water just had a huge impact on, the protection of sharks and on many, many levels. And he did. He became like the face of, shark diving or shark protection all around the world, and had a major impact. Unfortunately, this past week, he was diving off the coast of Isla Mirada, and he didn't come back. And, we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that happened, not getting too specific, but it's a tragedy any way you look at it. But as a testament to his life, it is humbling or just amazing to see the reaction from the dive industry and from divers around the world or just people who love sharks. I mean, Facebook just literally exploded this week when he went missing after the dive off of, who knows most about this is because he's in his backyard is Pete from Scuba Board, who's on with us from the Florida Keys today on the show.
Hello,
Pete,
hello.
How are you, buddy?
Well, a little sad.
Yeah, of course, everybody is. The dive industry, anybody who loves sharks, I mean, Rob was just a great guy, did such great work. But this happened evidently off the coast of Isla Mirada. What was the wreck again they were diving? What's it called?
Queen of Nassau.
Queen of Nassau. So supposedly it's like 220 feet. They were diving rebreathers, which obviously is a little bit more on the extreme side of diving, technical diving for sure.
Well, they were diving rebreathers, and they were also diving Trimix.
Yeah, which is even a step above just going on basic rebreather. I'm certified on like level one rebreathers. When you get into the Trimix, that does allow you to go deeper, longer, and just like if you're diving nitrox on open circuit, that kind of thing, it gives you some benefits in that regard. But it's also much more technical, less forgiving, and who knows what exactly happened, but from the initial reports, it looks like, this was one of those classic examples where, the guys were diving down there. Maybe they were diving behind, beyond their limits of training. We I don't really want to go there too much at this point, but I have no doubt that they knew what they were doing. And obviously things went wrong on some level that caused this tragedy for Rob not to come back. But I think you would agree with me that the outpouring of support, I mean, when he initially went missing, I mean, it was crazy how Facebook blew up. Would you agree with me on that, Pete, or what?
Well, I'm not on Facebook that much, but I will tell you that the keys blew up.
Yeah.
I mean, the...
Well, Facebook, scuba board, all the internet was just on fire. You know, and down there, I'm sure it was all over the news, too, right?
I'm talking about... Yeah, no, forget the news.
Yeah.
Almost everyone here in the Keys that's in diving or in boating or anything is on VHF. We're listening to the radio chatter. We want to hear when something happens. And, you know, pon, 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 pon.
Yeah.
Filled the airwaves down here. It was hard to get away from, and it was a constant reminder that we were missing someone. So it really brought it to home. There are people with tears in their eyes. The Coast Guards was out. The, you know, he was ultimately found by a one of the volunteer units that does our fire, you know, our fire protection.
Yeah, I read something that they had just given up the search.
Well, they were calling it off. They haven't quite given up.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, okay. They were in the process of calling it off or something. And then, like you said, someone from the local fire department dive team found them. And thank God they did.
They sent out an ROV. So they were, you know, at 200 feet, we don't have very long to look.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would be lots of dives up and down, and you'd be missing a lot. But just send an ROV. An ROV can stay down there indefinitely, you know, until the battery wears out or whatever you're running off of. So they looked for him with an ROV, and they found him about 300 feet from where he went down.
Yeah. Which is remarkable, I mean, because it had been like 3 days, so that's kind of remarkable, too. I was really concerned when I saw the initial reports. I'm like, man, that deep, you know, no telling what has happened. He could have gotten caught up in a current, and he could be anywhere at this point. But remarkably, they did find him, and, I mean, obviously, they'll find out exactly what happened by analyzing the rebreather and his dive computers and all that stuff, and maybe they can... You know, keep accidents like this from happening again, or, you know, maybe there'll be some lesson to the story and we'll have to let, you know, time pass and find out if indeed that ends up being the case that, you know, people can learn from this. But
hopefully.
Yeah. But
hopefully. And this was, to me, I know you said it was about training. To me, it wasn't as much about training as it was about limits. And, you know,
well, that's part of training. That's part of training is instilling that that message of you don't dive beyond your limits. And, you know, like I said, these are initial reports. I don't want to get too specific,
sure.
But there's been some talk that he had just gotten certified on this particular rebreather system.
This last weekend.
Yeah, and they were diving rebreathers, which alone are pretty intense systems. They're very Pete and myself are both rebreather certified. Pete even farther than I am, but I have learned over the years and seen enough incidents over the years to know, especially when it comes to rebreathers, they are unforgiving if you break the rules. And because what
Amen,
happens
brother
yeah what happens with a rebreather is when you go beyond a particular limit on a rebreather, you can potentially just go to sleep like a light switch, and you know that's you're done. I mean, you fall asleep whether you're in 20 feet or 200 feet, and if your buddy is not nearby and doesn't see you, goodbye. You know, there's no getting out of that, you know, getting yourself out of that by, you know, doing some kind of emergency procedure because it's lights out. And so they're very unforgiving in that regard. So you got to be very disciplined, you know, in how you operate those things and know it going in. And I'm sure he did. Unfortunately, but regardless, you know, it's a tragedy. Now, I'll ask you this, Pete. Did you know Rob? Had you met him over the years? You know,
I've met him at a couple of DEMAs, at least at one DEMA. Like you, I was like, oh, come on. Nobody's that chiseled. Come on.
Exactly. He was very attractive.
What's wrong
man.
With you?
Yeah. I mean, it was scary how good looking of a guy he was. But he had a Hollywood actor written all over his face. I mean, he really did. But he was a super nice guy, though, too. He really was.
He was.
Very approachable. He'd talk to anybody, including myself. And, you know, and I think his heart, no doubt, was in the right place when it came to, you know, getting the word out on sharks and protecting them.
Yeah, we're going
to
miss that voice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're going to miss that voice.
No
doubt. One thing, Greg,
yeah.
About the 300 feet, when you go off the loop, when the loop's out of your mouth, like when he obviously passed out, probably like the other diver did, and that loop fills with water instead of air, he immediately became an anchor and sank pretty quickly. It's
I'm
not
sure,
like... he's floating down. It's like all of a sudden all the buoyancy is gone. He's become very negative very quickly. And that also means that they're probably not going to be able to determine a lot from his rebreather because all that's been flooded.
Well, that may be. But they'll have some of the computer data, I'm sure, from the system he was using. I mean, who knows? They'll figure something out, I'm sure.
Hopefully they'll let us know what it is so we can learn from it. A lot of times that stuff, they don't let us mere mortals have it.
True. So true. And that's what I want to talk about next. What could we gather? What positive messages divers hearing about this message could we get from this? That's what we're going to dive into next. Right here on the world's first radio show devoted to diving.
This is the Worldwide Scuba Radio Network.
For over 20 years, Explore Ventures has been taking people just like you aboard their liveaboard dive vessels. You start as a guest and leave as a friend. It's a philosophy that comes from the top down at Explore Ventures, and just maybe why Explore Ventures is one of the best repeat customer stats in the dive industry. Of course, they offer spectacular diving in the Bahamas, Turks and Caicos, and Galapagos. All the details are right there at exploreventures.com, but it's the people and the friendships one makes on these adventures that really sets Explore Ventures apart from the rest. That's why we've made Explore Ventures the official liveaboard company of Scuba Radio. Matter of fact, we'll be on several trips throughout the year, and we'd love for you to join us on any of these great diving adventures. However, the bottom line is, Explore Ventures does the liveaboard dive experience right. Call them and see for yourself at 1-800-322-3577 or visit exploreventures.com. That's exploreventures.com.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
Divers in the Know Dive with Dan. Divers Alert Network. DAN is the industry's largest association dedicated to scuba diving safety and has served divers for over 30 years. DAN provides emergency assistance, medical information, educational opportunities, trip insurance, and more. Whether you're just learning scuba or a veteran, a DAN membership just makes good sense. Sign up and take advantage of the many benefits DAN offers by going to dan.org. DAN, your dive safety association.
Surface interval is complete. You're now clear to dive with Scuba Radio.
Scuba Radio.
The world's first radio show devoted to diving.
Scuba Radio.
Dive, dive, dive.
Hey guys, this is Wyland, and you're listening to Scuba Radio, the world's first radio show devoted to diving. Dive in.
Thank you, Wyland. I am Greg the Dive Master. All right, so I have CJ, a bubble boy, in the studio. Also, CJ's son, Ryan, is with us. Eric Douglas, world-renowned diving author, and Pete from Scuba Board. So we got a full crew, for sure, to reflect a little bit on the life of Rob Stewart, who was the filmmaker behind Sharkwater that just caught fire. It's been downloaded and seen all around the world. I remember it was me, Bubble Boy, and CJ saw that movie together. Rob hooked us up with a premiere when that
we did. It was a date.
Yeah. Okay. All right. If you want to, you know, call it that, why not?
It was Bros Night Out.
Yeah. I mean, three guys going to see a very attractive young man dive with sharks.
Nothing wrong with that.
Okay. I didn't say there was. But it was a powerful film. There was no doubt.
Did a lot of great work. I enjoyed it. I had no idea the scope of what happens with all that shark finning stuff.
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, some of the footage that he got, especially overseas with some of the shark fin market and all that stuff. And it did a lot, you know, to, you know, bring awareness, you know, for people to, you know, get a little bit more open-minded to the fact that sharks are under attack, and a very effective medium, obviously, you know, having a film like that. And he was working on Sharkwater Extinction, which was going to be a follow-up to that first film. I think it was, 2008 or something like that, from what I read, when that came out. I don't remember when we saw the film, but it obviously was around that time. And anyway, they were filming off of Isla Mirada. Supposedly, the reports are he was trying to get some footage of a sawtooth shark, which are very, you know, skittish when it comes to hanging around, you know, divers with bubbles. So they're diving these rebreathers, and something went wrong, and he didn't come back. So we have lost him this week. It's a big loss that it'll take a while for everybody to get over. And I mean, so much stuff you see on Facebook, you just realize how effective Rob was in his work, and God bless him for him for it. And you know, rest in peace. We send our best to his family and friends, obviously, as well as everyone in the dive industry for that matter. But I kind of wanted to take this into, you know, what can we get out of this as divers, in a positive light? And I want to ask Eric, because you know, Eric used to work at Dan. He kind of was one of the guys who helped write the book on dive safety. And that is something that, you know, Divers Alert Network still does to this date, where they're always trying to learn from people's mistakes. I mean, I don't know, Eric, what do you get out of this? What could we look at it from a dive safety standpoint, you know, from anybody hearing about this, maybe even for the first time? What do you think?
Well, you know, Greg, and I still write the Lessons for Life column with Scuba Diving Magazine.
That's right.
And that's something I do in every issue, is analyze dive accidents, usually fatal, although not everyone we cover is fatal. The most important things that happen in every dive accident, with the exception of dive fatalities that are cardiac related, and you and I know all that discussion all too well.
Yes, unfortunately. Yeah.
But is people either ignore the rules, or they go beyond training.
Yeah.
You know, they're not comfortable in the situation they get themselves into, whether it's getting into an overhead environment, going too deep, doing whatever they're doing, and they don't know how to deal with it when a problem comes up.
Mm-hmm.
They're, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, depending on your perspective, people do that kind of stuff all the time and get away with it.
Yeah.
What that does, though.
Well, I was just going to say, it goes back to that classic line you hear, there's old divers and there's bold divers, but there's not old, bold divers, generally
Absolutely.
Speaking. Yeah, with the exception of the dive god.
With the exception of the dive god, and he's an anomaly.
True.
And actually, a lot of the stuff, the bold stuff that Neil does, has nothing to do with scuba diving, but that's a different discussion,
Absolutely,
too. Yeah. But, yeah, so honestly, the biggest thing, the biggest lesson to learn from this, and I'm the same way with you. I don't want to speculate what happened or what went wrong or who did what that they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
But it does sound to me like he wasn't experienced. He may have gone through the training, but he hadn't logged 50 dives on that rebreather. He hadn't logged hours diving that rebreather before he went pretty deep water. You know, 200 and whatever feet to the sand on that location, that takes special breathing gas mixes, that takes a lot of extra planning, and you do one thing wrong and it sends you into an emergency situation.
Yeah.
One thing you're trained to do when you're learning to dive on a rebreather is bail out and emergency situations. But if that's not second nature, if you haven't practiced it 50 times or more or whatever it takes, when an emergency happens, you're not able to jump on that immediately.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, just diving within your limits. I mean, that's one of those golden rules that we learn in our open water class. You know?
Yeah, whether it's a 40 for 40 on a nice reef, or whether it's a 200-foot dive on a rebreather, you dive within your limits. You understand your personal limits, your training, not what your ego is telling you, but what your brain is actually telling you.
Exactly. You know, there's certain types of dives I won't do. I know that may surprise some people listening right now, but I'm not really as adventurous as I project it to all the chicks. You hear what I'm saying? When you're trying to impress them is one thing.
What chicks? I see only dudes.
Well, that's true. But, you know, regardless, you know, the thing is I'm very disciplined and diving within my limits. And when it comes to rebreathers, boy, do I love them. I mean, that is quite an experience to go down on a rebreather. But as Pete, I think, will back me up on this from Scuba Board, it is not something you go into lightly. You have to commit to learning the rebreather system that you're training on, and you have got to stay within your limits. And it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, you know, even when I got into it, I was like, wow, you know, you better use a checklist like pilots do flying airplanes. Because if you miss one little thing, it literally could be the end of your life. You'd back me up on that, Pete, you think?
I would. You know, Doppler, a guy on Scuba Board, once said that you should approach every technical dive like it's a formal event. It's a prom. Okay. You know, everything has to be just right. The buttons have to be buttoned just right. Everything has to be set up to where you know where it is, you know that it's working correctly. If anything's out of order, you disconnect from it. You call the dive, you thumb it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you say comparing it to a prom, though, it's like, so you're making out with your rebreather after the dance? And
dude, for that price, you better be.
Oh, true. Good point. When you put it in that, I get it. Okay, now it's all coming to light. All right, we got more coming up on the world's first radio show devoted to diving.
Scuba Radio.
Scuba.
Scuba Radio.
This is the world's first radio show devoted to diving. Okay, so have you ever wondered why fish smell fishy? Have you ever wondered this?
Never.
There evidently is a scientist that is studying this factor. And yeah, it made me think, you know, like, yeah, they do smell kind of funky. And he's already discovered some interesting little tidbits. You know, one listener emailed me already and said, well, the reason is, like, all these smelly divers are jumping in the water after they've been sweating under the sun on the dive boat, and all that smelly stuff is rubbing off on the fish.
It's not it.
Or the other possibility is, well, hey, how would you smell if you had to swim around your own urine all day?
Not,
okay.
Not good.
No, that wouldn't
be good, Greg. Like ammonia.
Yeah, so, but neither one of those end up being the reason, according to the scientist in Germany, of why fish smell the way they do. And now, have I, you know, at least piqued your interest, CJ, in that regard?
Not really.
Not really? Not at all? What about this? He claims, the scientist in Germany claims, he wants to find out, you know, why do they smell fishy? But then why sometimes they smell of other things like caramels and peaches?
Right.
Yeah, have you ever come across a fish that smelled like caramels or peaches?
No.
I haven't either. I think that's a German thing.
I knew a girl named Peaches once.
Yeah. Did she smell like caramels?
Yes. Smelled
like fish?
Hey, quit it. Just stop right there. I don't know. Pete from Scuba Board surely has heard this kind of stuff before. Pete, have you?
The only thing I know, that the only sure way of stopping a fish from smelling is to cut off its nose.
Oh, I walked right into that one. I really did.
Now, the mammals don't smell, right? Just the fish.
I don't. Maybe. Well, I don't know. Yeah, you two are, you know, over there.
I think everything smells. It's like an accent.
Yeah, but
why do you have an accent? You know, yeah. You don't hear your own accent. You don't smell your own smell.
Okay. True. You don't smell like roses. I've heard that one before, and God knows that ain't true. More coming up.
This is the Worldwide Scuba Radio Network.
Yeah, and all ready to use.
Things are beginning to add up.
I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. And I'll be okay.
Yes, indeed. We will be okay here on the world's first radio show devoted to diving. I am Greg the Dive Master. Why do fish smell? Well, according to this scientist in Germany who is studying that particular thing. I never really thought about it before myself, but it was interesting because, first of all, I didn't quite get where he found some fish that smelled like caramels and peaches.
Can I guess?
What, where those fish that smell like that are?
No, oh. Why they smell.
Okay, you could. Yes.
If I get it right, can I get a Scuba Radio t-shirt?
Absolutely not, but go ahead anyway.
I want a prize. I want a guarantee. I want a verbal confirmation of a prize.
I will give you a verbal confirmation of a prize. That's what you will get as your prize. You won't get a prize, but I'll give you the verbal confirmation
prize, of it.
I found this fuzzy M&M under your chair.
Okay.
That's not an M&M.
Yeah, but that makes a great prize,
Kitty.
Though. It does make a great prize.
No, it does not.
Okay, well, go ahead and answer anyway. What is your theory?
It's their, I bet they stink because of their slime layer.
Ah.
Don't they have protective slime layers?
I assume they do.
And you guys can be my witness. He did not tell me off the air.
They do have slime.
They do have slime.
He had his headphones on.
Yeah.
And he was grooving to the music. He,
right.
He did not talk.
I did not. And so that's an interesting theory. Not even mentioned by the scientist in Germany, though.
So it's not the slime.
It's not the slime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe it was lost in translation.
Maybe. But, you know, once again, he hasn't discovered why they smell, but he has, and he's still studying this to try to figure out what it exactly is. But he has evidently uncovered some interesting differences between wild fish and farm-raised fish, because more and more, because of the demand on, you know, fish for humans to eat, you know, these fish farms are becoming more prevalent around the world. And one of the things he has uncovered is that farm-raised fish have a tendency to have more odors.
Yeah, they probably smell like chicken.
Nope. They don't smell like chicken. They smell like the stuff that comes out of chicken, though.
Feathers?
The fertilizer and stuff that they may use.
Poop?
Or may. Yeah. They say the farm-raised fish have a tendency to smell like manure. Which
like what?
Manure.
Chicken dirt.
Yeah. And
they're poopsicles.
Like, very, very possible. You know, but it makes me, you know, either not want to eat fish or make sure I only eat wildly, you know, wild caught fish, you know, wild salmon, that kind of thing. Or,
yeah.
Another reason. Because you don't want to be thinking that you're eating poop.
Seen any of these fish farms?
Yeah, of course I have.
I mean, they smell to high heaven just walking up to the water. They're gross.
So evidently farm fish smell worse than wild-raised fish. But, you know, I'll tell you what. When you catch a fish, if you've harvested a fish, spearfishing or whatever, they stink. They smell funky. Especially after a while.
You got to refrigerate them, Greg.
Well, you got to refrigerate. Even if they're refrigerated, they still can smell kind of funky. Yeah, am I right on that?
Yeah.
You got to flash freeze them, Greg.
But even if you flash freeze them, they still can smell like fish. I don't
even
like
the
smell
ice
of
fishies?
I think he's not talking about them smelling like fish. I think he's talking about them smelling like crap, like poo.
Like
and I agree with him.
What about the frozen fish sticks that are breaded?
Oh, those smells delicious. Oh, my gosh, yes. Really? Yum. Mrs. Paul's.
They smell like tartar sauce.
Yeah, true. Okay, so there's that. If you cook them, they smell great. If you let them sit around, they start smelling funky, and evidently you know, the ones that are farm raised smell worse.
Yeah,
you know what fish doesn't smell?
What?
Lionfish. Man, that's got to be the cleanest smelling fish out there.
Hmm. You're lying.
But I'm bumped.
That is nasty.
Yeah. Oh, that stings.
But, you know, the thing is, I never thought that it would matter. But evidently he says it does because of the manure and the fish, and they're all congested and stuff. So just know that next time you're eating fish, you might want to ask the waiter, like, hey, I'm trying to be heart healthy. I want to eat something that is very prevalent. I'd prefer farm-raised as opposed to wild-caught because, I like seeing the fish as a diver and that kind of thing. Like, well, you're going to have to take the farm-raised poo fish. Is that really what you would like to eat today? I'm going to have to second guess that decision. You know, hear what I'm saying, guys?
Radio Gold, only 17 more minutes to go.
Yeah, Greg, I have a pet hackfish.
Keeping time. Our timekeeper, once again.
Yes.
Okay. So you guys aren't with me on this.
Classic show.
Yeah.
One of the best.
Peaches and caramel, though. Have you ever come across a fish that smelled like that?
I have a pet hagfish named Pickles that I keep in my bathtub.
Smells like caramels?
Smells like caramels.
Why do I feel like that's not true?
He's a liar. He's a lion.
I harvest the slime.
What do you do with it?
I can't really say it this time.
Oh, okay.
He uses it as a greaser on that hair.
He uses it as a moisturizer.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
He rubs it on his bunions.
My
corns.
Yeah. It's better than an ointment, I believe, probably. Pete, has anyone on Scuba Board ever talked about the smell of fish? Or no? Is this something even new to you?
I'm sure they have, Greg.
But you've
I'm sure I've avoided that thread.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think this is something of interest to divers. I mean, I don't like smelling fish.
I just expect they're going to smell and get them in the cooler as fast as I can.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Okay. Well,
they don't smell as bad as octopi or, calamari. That ammonia is really strong with those guys.
Yeah. Is that the ink that's rotten?
They just produce a lot of ammonia.
Well, okay, if you say so. I mean, I guess you could take some of that goo, whether it's fish slime or... octopus goo. I actually got somebody on Facebook asked me if you had any or if I had any suggestions on how to seal their mask. You know, if they have a mustache like moi here. You know, I've never had a problem with a leaky mask that much, despite the fact that I have a mustachio.
Yeah. I shave that top eighth of an inch under my nose.
Oh, is that how you do it?
That's how I do it, and the mask fits right under the nose, seals fine.
Yeah. Well, okay. What are you guys laughing?
What
about?
Do you have?
Say it again like that.
I have a mustache.
No, no, no. Like you just did, though.
I did. I said I've got a mustache.
No, you said mustachio.
Yeah, you got to throw it off.
Now you guys have stumbled across the reason why I harvest hagfish slime.
That's what you use on your mustache to seal your mask?
It seals my mask.
No.
And it keeps it clear.
In a pinch, if you really do need something, Vaseline is what most people recommend. And he actually mentioned that. He goes, I've heard Vaseline. Well, you got any other suggestions? This is going to gross you out.
Are we still talking about sealing your mask?
Yes.
Okay. Mustache is French for mistake.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I don't buy that at all.
All right. And I know Pete's going to back me up on this one, but the other way to do if you really needed something in a pinch, and I mean that kind of literally, just blow your nose.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
It is disgusting, but that
no,
that
it's
will
not.
Work.
I'd rather.
What do you mean, no, it's not? Of course
I'd
it is.
I'd rather deal with a little bit of leakage.
Yeah.
Just clear it.
Yeah. That's what I'd
say. Put snot on my face.
Well, yeah, that would not. You don't really want to. Tell the world about that.
It's not that bad. I got this all day.
Yeah. So,
Greg, there's a button.
I've got a nose for it.
Real easy.
Yeah. Yeah. How many minutes left?
About 14 and a half.
Got to kill time.
Darn. Okay. Well, anyway, so there's something to use in a pinch, I guess. But the other thing, the shaving of the nose hairs just below there to give you a little skin area. It doesn't look too weird. I mean, I don't know, you don't have a mustache, do you, Pete? Or is that just what you used to?
Yes, I've had a mustache for like 40 years or so.
Oh, okay. Of course. Well, I knew that.
Greg and I don't have that. We have what you call a Van Dyke.
Easy.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
A Van Dyke.
Dad, you need to grow a goatee again.
It's a goatee that runs into a mustache. It's a Van Dyke.
Ah, is that what it is?
Yes. I think it's 2017. They prefer to be called lesbians.
A Van Lesbian.
Okay.
If you will.
Oh, wow.
Show a little sensitivity.
Boy, this degenerated quickly.
Yeah, well, there's always
13
a
minutes.
Time. Yeah. At least we got our timekeeper to keep us on track.
Jeez. And next, Pete's going to tell us what manatees smell like.
Oh, listen. I don't think we are. I don't think that's going to happen. No.
I was just postulating. I bet.
You postulate?
I bet if you made bacon out of manatees, it'd be delicious.
Okay, we're out of time. And we'll be back in a minute here on the World's First Radio Show to go to dive. Scuba Radio.
Would you like to talk diving? Greg the Dive Master's all toweled down and ready to take your call now. Call Scuba Radio at 1-888-88-SCUBA.
For over 20 years, Explore Ventures has been taking people just like you aboard their liveaboard dive vessels. You start as a guest and leave as a friend. It's a philosophy that comes from the top down at Explore Ventures, and just maybe why Explore Ventures has one of the best repeat customer stats in the dive industry. Of course, they offer spectacular diving in the Bahamas, Turks and Caicos, and Galapagos. All the details are right there at exploreventures.com, but it's the people and the friendships one makes on these adventures that really sets Explore Ventures apart from the rest. That's why we've made Explore Ventures the official liveaboard company of Scuba Radio. Matter of fact, we'll be on several trips throughout the year, and we'd love for you to join us on any of these great diving adventures. However, the bottom line is, Explore Ventures does the liveaboard dive experience right. Call them and see for yourself at 1-800-322-3577 or visit ExploreVentures.com. That's ExploreVentures.com.
Do you have a compelling story of what inspired you to become a PADI diver or PADI professional? Has your PADI certification changed your life, relationship, or career in some unique way? The Professional Association of Diving Instructors wants to share your story to inspire others to start, keep, or teach diving. For more information, please visit PADI.com/my story. That's PADI.com/my story. And thanks for choosing PADI, the way the world learns to dive.
Obviously, we have it pretty good here at Scuba Radio, but why let us have all the fun? Dive into scubaradio.com and allow us to share the joy. It's all there, from cool monthly giveaways to info on how you can join us on our next big dive adventure or Scuba Radio broadcast. Click on the Shop tab for special Scuba Radio pricing on Scuba Radio hats, jackets, shirts, and an assortment of unique items you won't find anywhere else. You can even get info on how to take scuba classes from a real live mermaid. So dive in now at Scuba Radio.
Scuba Radio. Scuba Radio.
Prepare to rig for dive!
Your surface interval is complete. You're now clear to dive with Scuba Radio.
Scuba Radio.
The world's first radio show devoted to diving.
Scuba Radio.
Dive, dive, dive.
She loves to dive, dive, dive. She loves to dive, dive, dive. She loves to dive, 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 dive. I think you found your love, 'cause you can go diving today. It's you I'm jealous of. How did you end up this way? She said she loves to, and you know we think that's rad. Yes, she loves to, and you know we are so glad. She said she heard this show, it almost blew her mind. Called Scuba Radio, the first show of its kind. She says she loves to, and you know we think that's rad. Yes, she loves to, and you know we are so glad. Woo! She loves to dive, dive, dive. She loves to dive, dive, dive. For a dive like that, you know you should be glad. For a dive like that, you know you should be glad. For for a dive like that. You know we are so glad.
This is the world's first radio show devoted to diving. I am Greg the Dive Master, CJ and Bubble Boy with me in the studio. Okay, so we've kind of figured out why fish smell.
5 minutes, 15 seconds.
Oh, thank you. But what if you were going to a restaurant and you needed to order? No big deal, right? But what if you were underwater? Yeah, there's a...
I would wait till I surfaced.
And no, you don't have to. In Brussels,
to a restaurant.
There's an underwater restaurant in Brussels now that you can go down underwater.
Is that where they make the sprouts?
Maybe.
As I like to call them, tiny cabbages.
Okay. But in this case, in Brussels, it's an underwater restaurant. So, you know, you go down underwater, you swim into this little underwater habitat.
Is it all
and then
sushi?
Divers. Well, I don't know. I mean, would you order fish? Maybe.
Yeah.
That would be kind of inappropriate, wouldn't it?
Why?
Well, you're swimming around with them. You don't like, hey, I'm eating your brother now, you know.
Oh, I don't think they really put that much thought into it.
You don't think so?
No.
They just swim
around.
That kind of thought
they're
not
process.
Deep thinkers.
They just swim around being smelly, is what you're trying
exactly.
to say.
Exactly.
Okay.
Stupid, smelly fish.
Okay. I don't know. Would you do that, too? I mean, would you go to an underwater restaurant? Would that be more appealing to you as a scuba diver? It would be, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's in Brussels.
You got to go all the way to Brussels right now.
Well, maybe they'll build one in Florida eventually. They build everything else here.
Well, it's just some
guy. We won't
get
the original, but we'll get a crappy copy.
Well, it'd be pretty easy to do because all this guy did in Brussels was take a two-person habitat and throw it into the deep end of a pool.
Do they take reservations?
I don't know.
Is it like one of those swim-up bars they have at these exotic clubs in the Caribbean?
No, it's an underwater habitat sank in the bottom of the deep end of a pool. But your maitre d' and a waiter comes to you in scuba gear and delivers your food.
$3.20.
So you have that. So it is something that you guys would do as divers. You think that'd be kind of cool?
That would be cool.
Well, you have the underwater habitat at Jules Undersea Lodge down there in Key Largo. I don't
We've
know.
We've done that.
But that's not a restaurant.
We didn't
that's
do that, did we?
I did with Greg once. You weren't.
We had lost him at that point. We ditched him. But they don't have an underwater restaurant. So maybe they ought to turn it into a restaurant as opposed to just an underwater habitat. And kind of make it a new thing,
yeah.
You think? I mean, I don't know what you would, you know, sushi would probably be the easiest thing to serve underwater.
It's very fresh.
You don't have to cook it, right?
Sir, you have some sushi and your mustache.
Do they have an underwater bathroom in this restaurant?
It's called the
Damn
door.
Damn it, Jimmy.
That's what I thought.
It's called the door. That would be inappropriate. All right.
I'm not eating down there.
Well, I got one more little nugget to share with you. You know, it's like Science Week here at Scuba Radio for some reason today.
2:15.
Why humpbacks breach? It is season right now. The Dominican Republic. The humpbacks have migrated to that area to,
they're showing off.
Wrong.
They use the cresting waves to massage their back.
Ah, Bubble Boy comes up with one that is wrong.
Barnables.
Again, trying to get rid of the barnacles on their back.
It's not even happy hour yet. I'm sober as a judge. It's barnacle scraping.
No, that would be incorrect as well. You guys are a bunch of losers. According to scientists in Australia, the whales are breaching to communicate. It's their way to yell. So, like, if they're
G'day!
In a congregated area.
G'day, mate!
Of the Dominican Republic, where the whales congregate. I mean, there's literally hundreds of them there right now, and they come together and they calf their, little whales or whatever, you know. And
I thought they would.
How many minutes?
About a minute and a half.
Okay. I wanted to translate that in whale. No, it's their form of yelling in a crowded room. or a crowded area. There's so much, you know, acoustic information going on with all those whales in the area.
It's
they
like
have
a rave.
To breach to make enough noise to cut through the clutter. That's what they're saying. They did some studies in Australia, or some scientists from Australia came up with this idea. Breach! Breach!
Got them all!
Hey, shut up, is what he's saying. Okay, that's enough nonsense for 1 week. Till next time, remember, 20, 25, it's always...
25 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. It's always better. Where, gang?
Down where it's wetter!
Thanks for doing the whale interpretation.
And watch out for your barnacles.
Safe diving, everyone.
Scuba Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
Scuba Radio.
This seems the logical place for fish to congregate.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past editions of Scuba Radio worldwide over the internet at scubaradio.com.
So we're in international waters?
Indeed so.
Tell a friend and buddy up with your radio every week for Scuba Radio, the world's first radio show devoted to diving.
Well, it's all very nice here, but we should be going. I miss me wife and me oxygen.
Yes, we all miss our loved ones and gases. Let's go.
The opinions you just heard on Scuba Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests.
Okay, you know what I just heard? Blah, 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 blah.
They are not necessarily those of any station or network, its management, or advertisers.
Come on, quit yanking me.
Scuba diving does involve risk and should never be conducted without proper instruction and training.
Oh, what's the worst thing that could happen?
I could die.
Have any questions or comments? Feel free to do so via the web at scubaradio.com.